Good afternoon, this is Gary Kavner here on the right side. I'm here with Michael Dwyer, my friend and colleague. Today is Monday, the 27th of January. I should really stop giving dates on these podcasts so it becomes a lot easier to re-upload them if we ever miss a day.
True.
I've ruined it for myself. But anyway, it's still an election day, as you undoubtedly know. Unless you've had the pleasure of brain trauma recently. Probably improve everyone's day if they could forget that. But we are not talking about the election today, other than tangentially. What we are talking about is the answer to the question I know you've all wanted to hear. Someone had the very bright idea of going to the political leaders of every party in this country and asking them the important questions, the questions you really need to get the honest answer, and you knew they'd give you the honest answer. That question being, do you consider yourself a feminist? Which a politician would never lie about in some sort of attempt at relevancy. So the National Women's Council of Ireland, writing an article in The Independent, which is interesting because they are the authors of this, Michael. It's not, they didn't do it and send in a press release.
They are the authors of their own downfall, or their own misfortune, if that should be the case.
So they went to Micheál Martin of Fianna Fáil, Leo of Fine Gael, Brendan Howlin of the Labour Party, Eamon Ryan, the Green Party, Roisin Shortall and Catherine Murphy, Social Democrats, and Mary Lou McDonald of Sinn Féin. Now, before we get into the actual answers they gave, because let's be honest, they're all going to be the same answer, you know this and I know this. What I found really interesting about this is who did not get asked.
Yes, that's always... It's always the person not at the table that's interesting.
Yeah, because if they asked these, they could have easily asked all of them. Now, maybe they did and they edited it out. But that would be a bit of a weird thing to do politically, and politicians don't like that sort of thing.
True.
So they didn't ask Aintu. Pádraig Tobin is an elected TD. But they could say, well, Aintu have never run in an election under their own banner, a national election, and so we didn't ask them. They didn't ask Renew It, but there they could say, well, Renew It did run, but they didn't get any TDs elected, so therefore we didn't ask them. But they also didn't ask Solidarity and People Before Profit, who have run in elections and have run seats and currently have more seats than the Social Democrats and the Green Party put together.
Yeah, and while you could look at Aintu and Renew It and say, well, the thing about them is that whatever they might say, they are not on board with one of the central planks of modern second, third wave feminism. They are off script on that one. And, you know, in other ways perhaps as well, they're a little bit too traditional in their values. Solidarity People Before Profit are relentlessly on message.
If they were any more committed to it, they'd be moving meat grinders into maternity wards.
Oh, God, help us. Oh, was that? Oh, help. Okay, thank you.
But they're absolutely online with the National Women's Council. Also, when you look at this feminist manifesto, the People for Profit, people are all signing it.
Oh, yeah.
And they're one of the few parties that can actually say, not only are we signing it, but we'd implement it. And then the National Women's Council of Ireland turns around and puts the knife right into their back by not even bothering to include them.
Women, eh? God.
I think I know why that might be.
Why is that, Gary?
I think it's because the People for Profit and Solidarity, they may believe the right things, but they're not the right kind of people. They're not the sort of people a deeply middle-class, respectable organisation, and if the National Women's Council of Ireland is anything, it is respectable. They're not the sort of person they'd bring around for tea.
Are you saying they're not the kind of people who could tell the difference between Prosecco and Champagne?
They may not be. Although a surprising amount of them were brought up in homes where you would expect they would have learned that.
Oh, indeed. And also, I suspect a lot of people couldn't tell the difference. They may not drink Prosecco. Some of them may not drink at all.
Some of them may not even... They may drink, but they may not drink any spirits.
Wow.
Beer drinkers. Beer. Lager, Michael.
Lager, ale, oh God.
Not even Guinness, which you might be able to, you know, work in. Lager.
Lager. Or, well, yeah, no, I was going to say maybe small cask, organic, real ale, but that's probably more green than People Before Profit.
And I would suspect that it's not that they asked them and they weren't included, because if you were an editor, you would have knocked out the Social Democrats before you knocked out People Before Profit.
Well, yes.
Because they're more relevant and they're polling higher and they're going to return more TDs.
And also, isn't it a bit redundant asking both the Labour Party and the Social Democrats? For many, many years, and this is not directly to topic, but I want to say it anyway. One of the great mysteries that people used to constantly talk about in Ireland was what was the difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And that mystery still persists. But I really want someone to explain to me the difference between Social Democrats and the Labour Party.
Well, I can explain the difference, Michael.
Can you, Gary?
I can. You see, Labour were willing to stand by their convictions and go into government and implement an imperfect form of those things, I think therefore ruining Fine Gael after 2011, which is probably what they wanted to do, and they took their hits for doing that.
Right.
The Social Democrats, unable to find the courage of their convictions, let us not forget that one of the founding members of the Social Democrats made her name running away from responsibility in Labour.
How so?
You know, there was the old ministerial issue and the sort of, I don't want to do this, I'll just become an independent.
Oh, yes, I suppose. And then, of course...
And then they were apparently approached by Fine Gael after the last election.
Yes.
And asked would they come in and what they wanted, and I'm told they were offered quite a lot of what they said they wanted. And they refused, which I believe is one of the reasons why Stephen Donnelly left the party.
And yes, instead of going to Fine Gael, who were doing the offering, he went to Fianna Fáil. Maybe they were offering better. For Stephen, that is, not generally. Stephen will be a minister in the cabinet.
Well, if he gets elected next time, he probably will be. Maybe not for health, but he'll be, he'll be somewhere.
Is he in the same town as Simon?
They're in the same constituency.
They're not far away. I mean, one's in Bray and one's in Greystones. Is that it?
I actually don't know where Simon Harris is based. He is...
They're not far away from each other anyway.
No. They're not far away from each other. One of them is up right beside the train station in Greystones.
That's handy.
It is. I occasionally see him actually coming and going.
So... Anyway,
I've never thought to stop him in the street and just start screaming at him, which seems to be a very popular thing this election.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you're right. Poor lads. Simon Harris is up in Bray. That's where his constituency office is.
So the Social Democrats were asked, even though, as I said, it seems slightly superfluous, but People Before Profit not. A strange, just one of those odd things. Maybe they were asked and just didn't have the time to respond, although you would have thought that somebody would have had
people say. I don't see People Before Profit saying no to a chance to burnish their progressive credentials. I mean, they ignore me when I send them queries about their candidates, to the extent I feel like I'm in sort of some long distance relationship with them.
Maybe you're just on their block list.
It could be the fact that every time I send them questions, they're of a very pointed nature about certain things their candidates are reported to have done in their private life, and I've sent in ones about multiple candidates at this point. But I don't have a feeling they'd ignore the National Women's Council of Ireland, because this is a good news story. They're not going to say anything unpleasant about you, if they're going to say anything at all.
Anyway, the question was, are you a feminist? So how many of them said no? I'm not a feminist. I don't have any truck with that kind of nonsense.
None of them.
Really?
And here's a question for you, Michael. How many of them, when asked what has been your biggest achievement for women's equality to date, mentioned the Eighth Amendment?
How many were asked?
Let's see. We have 3, 4, 5, 6.
I would say 6 would be my answer.
You, absolutely. And I think Leo has the best answer about it.
Oh, what did Leo say?
Leo said, I'm not going to say the repeal of the Eighth Amendment, because that was something that was achieved by so many people in Irish society over a long period. As Taoiseach, I merely provided an opportunity to make that decision, and they did. Which is a wonderful way of saying, I did this.
Yes, it's a wonderful example of the non-brag brag.
But it's well done. It's a sort of, I am, and to be fair, because he is the person who really could have scuttled this if he wanted to. He's able to go, well, I allowed it to happen, and therefore if I hadn't wanted it to happen, it wouldn't. So I don't need to brag about it, because we all know it.
There is, however, if he, in all of the various interviews, Leo does actually say one thing which is rather, I don't know if it was the subconscious letting out something that wasn't intended, or if it's maybe kind of a dog whistle to the nasty people like us. But did you notice the last line of his interview?
What was it?
We get better results when there is a diversity of views around the table. Now, you might say I'm being just picking up on it, but that's not the position. The position is that in and of itself, diversity qua diversity is based on gender, sex, ethnicity, age, income, all these things. That's diversity. Diversity of views is a very different thing. And that's the kind of old Leo point. The kind of point that Leo once upon a time would have made when he was against things like quotas for boards of private companies or county councillors or TDs or indeed repeal of the Eighth Amendment. That when he was that kind of Leo, diversity of views would have been very much Leo's position on the nature of diversity. Just, it may mean nothing, or it may be just, maybe in Leo there's the old Leo occasionally desperately struggling to get out.
There is actually one use in this article.
Yeah.
Because it is six party leaders, in their own words, answering a number of questions, it enables you to very quickly go between them and see the different ways in which all of them try and avoid answering a question they don't want to. Like, will you commit to having a gender-balanced cabinet?
Yeah.
Because pretty much everyone, bar the Social Democrats, gives an answer that sounds like they say yes, but doesn't actually say yes. So, for instance, here is Mary Lou McDonald's.
One. Yeah.
Ultimately, the decision of who serves in cabinet is one for the people to make. However, we have seen the effects of successive government decisions that have disproportionately affected women, particularly women from disadvantaged backgrounds. That shows the necessity of a cabinet and government that is representative of all sections of society. Which sounds like she's saying yes.
It's one of those examples that I like to point out if I'm doing a workshop with people about communications. The important thing when you talk very often, or certainly when people are listening to politicians, is that we have to remember that most of the time people don't remember the lyrics of the song. All they remember is the music. And that's a perfect example. You hear, when you, she creates a certain kind of music, so you leave with a certain impression. But if you actually read the lyrics, if you're a bit OCD about it, and actually parse the meaning of the lyrics, you find she hasn't actually committed herself to anything.
No, I mean, a lot of the time I find that the political communication is a lot like talking to a dog.
Okay.
In that dogs don't understand your words, but they understand the tone.
Yes.
And so, as long as you have the right tone, and you don't become gratuitous with it, you can say pretty much anything. And people will walk out thinking that you have agreed with them. The Green Party are also quite good.
Yeah.
Their answer to will you commit to a gender-balanced cabinet is, it's important that a cabinet is diverse in its opinions, expertise, and experiences. We are committed to a cabinet that is as diverse as possible in terms of age, gender, and race ethnicity, with regard to the composition of Dáil Éireann. Which also sounds like a yes, but isn't. But in a different way than Mary Lou's.
Yeah.
That's reliant much more on sort of qualifications of the statement.
I just...
As diverse as possible, with regard to the composition of Dáil Éireann. You broaden it beyond the question of gender. So that you can now say, well, we have diversity of opinions and expertise and experiences.
Yeah, but you don't. I mean, that just... If you look at that list that you've just read out of attributes, what was it? Age, gender?
Age, gender, race, ethnicity, opinions, expertise, and experiences.
Now, if you take opinions out of that, right, and it's only one in amongst a list of, what, six or seven, the tedious thing is, I have been, and I suppose you have enjoyed this experience yourself, I've been at meetings or at dinners or drinky things where you have a mix of people who look slightly different to each other. They all actually, weirdly, even though there may be men and women, they may be different ethnicities and they may be different ages, they actually bizarrely all kind of look the same. If you're in the right place, it depending on what kind of meeting it is, it could be a meeting where everybody in it is a doctrinaire, Friedman, Milton Friedman, monetarist, free marketeer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you go, but that's unlikely to happen in Ireland. It can happen if you go to the back of Dunhu's on Thursday night, but otherwise, you generally will find people who espouse some kind of a social analysis, which is kind of soft Marxist, postmodernist, a bit of Frankfurt School, bit of secondhand chewed up Freudianism, and all mixed up in. And the degree to which they disagree about anything is really, really small. I mean, we were talking about this actually recently in a podcast a while ago, where so often now in Irish politics, we've reached just that very often when you listen to either commentators or politicians speak, very often you're talking about aesthetic differences or competence differences rather than any kind of deep-seated ideological, philosophical difference about how to approach or understand an issue. And the notion that if you get a self-selected group of people, the notion that these factors, ethnicity or race or gender or sexuality, will in any way create some kind of creative dialectic is just nonsense. You could get 15 middle-aged men, but if you pick them from the right places, all of them would complete, you could have a constant fist fight of a real diversity of opinion, real diversity of views, but it would be absolutely condemned as lacking diversity. And I know it's an old, stupid, tired question, but what is it that we want from politicians? Is it a group of people who have thought about ideas, who have tried to understand the way the world works, tried to understand the problems, and want to implement a solution? And we elect different politicians with different ideas, because depending on our own political views. Or is it that we want to get some kind of Benetton ad doll which looks like the nation as reflected by the protected groups under the Discrimination Act? Is that, what function does that serve?
I did. It was actually one of the things I enjoyed about Peter Casey. I wouldn't rate him. It was the standard, are you a feminist roundtable, which is pretty much just a boilerplate exercise. Everyone says yes, you say your credentials, you bow before the priest, you get it on with. And he said no, and everything just came to this sort of screeching music stops.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of, what, do you not understand how this goes? This is like me saying, I hope you're having a good day.
Yeah.
The answer is, I am. You don't say you're having a bad day. And that was deeply amusing.
It was. And the thing that I remember talking to people afterwards who actually ended up voting for him. People that really surprised me. People I hadn't expected. People who would not be very comfortable with, shall we say, the music that he was producing. But what they liked about him was that having made the terrible mistake, instead of covering his head in ashes and apologising, he just said, no, I'm not going to apologise. I'm not going to back down. This is what I believe. And they found that honesty and refusal to go through this ritual abnegation very refreshing. Now, the irony of this to me is that if we actually say, I think that a doll composed of 160 men would be a good outcome. Take the National Women's Council, right? How much diversity of opinion do we think? No, I'll rephrase that. If what we want in our institutions, which accurately reflect the beliefs and values of society. How accurately does the National Women's Council reflect the beliefs and values of Irish women?
Well, when you, as we've said before, when you look at how many individual members they have, it's probably a couple of hundred at most. And you'd assume they'd be the people who actually think their view is reflected. But then, as I said, I think these are people who didn't talk to people for profit, largely because people for profit are not respectable to their social circle.
Yeah, but take for example...
It's really quite a small social circle.
Take a very polarising issue, like abortion. Roughly a third, slightly more than a third of Irish women voted to keep the Eighth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Are they represented in any way, shape or form on the National Women's Council?
Well, no, obviously.
No. Yeah, look at the politics of Pavey Point.
What about women who don't support a 40% gender quota on corporate boards?
Yeah, and there
To be fair, actually, looking at their manifesto, most of the, let's say, women who voted Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil,
yeah,
none of their views are represented by the National Women's Council if the manifesto they put out is an accurate summary of their views. But then again, they don't have to. They're much like Pavey Point. Pavey Point doesn't represent travellers.
It represents
itself.
It's itself. I know you could call this anecdata, but we came across traveler community across the country where we were talking to people. I encountered some incredible young traveler women who were really energized and active and going around the country organizing groups in Wexford and in Dublin and in Limerick and in Donegal and in Sligo and in Louth, all over the country, to canvass and to campaign. Utterly rejected the position of Pavey Point. Now, it's a while ago, but I know somebody did actually do polling, for example, on the issue of ethnicity. And they polled travellers on the issue of whether or not they want to be recognised as a separate ethnicity. And now I don't know how robust the methodology was, but I think there were a couple of polls, and they both came out with substantial majorities of travellers said, no, we don't want to be recognised as a separate ethnicity. We want to be treated decently and equally as Irish men and women who are citizens of the Republic.
I mean, that was a profoundly infantilising thing, actually. Because I did see similar studies, although some studies went other ways on it. But I found that deeply interesting in that when that was going on, nearly all of the voices I heard on the issue calling for it were from traveller NGOs, primarily Pavey Point, rather than travellers. And there was very much a sort of, this needs to be done for human rights issues, and very much not a sense of, well, what does the community actually think on this? We think this.
That old-fashioned, hard left view from the 60s and 70s, which people would say out loud, listen, the proletariat does not have the capacity, the tools of analysis to fully understand what their true needs are. We, as the vanguard of the proletariat, of the revolution, we understand what their needs are and we will provide them. They will afterwards be grateful to us. It's incredibly infantilizing and patronizing attitude, but that was the way. Again, there were some bits and pieces of polling done on the amendment, and also on the marriage referendum. And the notion that travellers were endorsing either the marriage referendum or in the way that Pavey Point was, it seemed to me was just flying in the face of it. So, how does that represent diversity? When we want to portray ethnic diversity in this country, it's always based on race and racial and skin colour, rather than say, well, actually, the single biggest ethnic minority in the country is Polish. Where are all the young Polish TV representatives on their youth programmes and stuff? It's just such a flawed notion. I happen to believe that, yeah, it would actually be a really good thing to have women involved in politics, because I think that men and women actually do have different temperaments and different interests, but not different capacities. Or we know there is the IQ difference. We're not talking about IQ difference between men and women, except possibly on the very extreme tails of the curve. But it's not that women have less capacity or less ability. Of course they don't. But they may have different interests and different temperamental attitudes, which could bring a different insight and a different attitude to politics. But to frame the question the way they are doing it and to introduce these quotas, rather than asking the question, well, what is it about politics that stops women wanting to get involved? And maybe the answer to that isn't something that's easily resolvable.
That reminds me of when Casey made his comments on Travellers. Pavey Point actually came out to attack him. But one of the co-directors attacked him directly. And instead of apologising, he said that they should resign from their position. Which was just a wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Not largely because I don't really Casey, and I don't like a lot of his stances. But I'm so used to people just apologising for things they clearly are not sorry for. And I don't think it works anymore. Most of the people you're apologising to are just going to use it to beat you down anyway.
Like, you referred to rather an interesting piece of research that had been done on girls and boys earlier on today. We're talking about how boys, if they were to excel or at a particular in something. Do you remember? You know what I'm talking about?
We were talking about, I can't remember. Did we do that on?
No, we didn't
record that.
We didn't. Yeah. Just explain what we're talking about there, because I think it's interesting.
So it was a piece of research I saw the other day. It was a fairly small sample size, so it's more useful as sort of an exploratory thing. But I would like to see it replicated. It may have already been replicated, and I just haven't seen the older studies. But what I did is they went to a group of boys and girls between, I think, 8 and 16, and they gave them a list of achievements, like entering into a romantic relationship, winning at a sporting event, doing well academically, all of that sort of thing. Things that you'd have to work towards that show a degree of determination or skill.
Yeah.
Probably particularly the romantic relationship option. And they basically said, if you achieve these things, would your same-sex friends think more of you, think less of you, or would they care at all? Would it have any impact on their opinion of you? And the majority of boys said that if they achieved things that of this nature, that their friends would think more highly of them. But a very large percent of women, I don't think it was a majority, I can't absolutely remember at this point, said that if they achieved those things, their peer group, which would be other young girls, would think less of them.
Yeah.
If they were seen to succeed. Now, I have no idea if that social dynamic is correct.
Well, accurate. But the reason it struck me as interesting in the context of this conversation about politics and women is that, to me, reinforces what we have, what a lot of studies have already shown, about men or boys who are driven by status, a desire for status. Status is very important for men, and that's why career, success in business and career, whatever it happens to be, is a big driver for them and their perceived status. Less important for women. We also know that in studies that women are far more concerned about having a good balance in their lives between their private lives, their home lives, and their professional lives. Whereas men are less concerned about that balance and are willing to be, shall we say, excessively privileged their work lives in order to advance at the cost of their
to find meaning in your work and destroy other aspects of your life in order to achieve it.
Exactly. And it just strikes me, I was talking to a guy today who comes from a political family, and we're talking, one of the things that always annoys me is when people give out about what politicians get paid. Now, there are reasonable questions about that and pensions and things like that. But I'm talking just salaries, and they think it is a horrible job.
It is, yeah.
It is a horrible job. You you are owned by the electorate, unless you are one of those very rare TDs that can just cut themselves off, doesn't have to canvass, doesn't have to go to funerals, doesn't have to do clinics and get people medical cards and all that kind of thing. I remember the local TD here who used to go out for a drink on Saturday night in the same pub as my parents. And all night, himself and the wife would be there, maybe with a couple of friends, and all night, somebody would be coming up and pulling him by the sleeves, saying, "Oh, Mick, can I just have a quick word with you?" And he was he had accepted, obviously, or maybe he enjoyed it. Maybe this was part of life. I don't think his wife particularly did. He was owned, and you are. You have incredibly little family life if you are an active TD in Ireland.
And people do not hesitate. Like in Britain, the idea that you could call to the home of your TD or MP would be ridiculous. You simply wouldn't do it. Here, they will. They absolutely will. If you're lucky, they'll phone ahead.
Our friend Richard Miller, the founder of the EBI, used to always talk about the fact that he remembered he was going to tell what he thought was a funny little story to at a dinner in Washington of people who were involved in politics in Washington. And he started to tell the story. He had some issue that he wanted his local Fine Gael TD to deal with. And he was telling briefly what the problem was. And he said, "So I had his home number, so I rang him up." And all the people laughed. I thought this was hilarious because they thought the joke was the idea that you would have the private number of your local representative. And Richard said to me after, "But that wasn't the joke. The joke was I couldn't get, when I rang, they said he wasn't at home, but drop around. And when I came around, he wasn't in the house. He was out in the cowshed milking the cows. That was the joke." And now, how many TDs milk cows these days, I don't know. But the point is, that, like you say, people will call around to the house and not have any problems with it. And I think those are issues that are certainly part of the story. Why? I don't think this is simply a story. And listen, I suppose the point I'm making is simply this. If we are serious about trying to get more women involved in politics without simply introducing straight-up draconian laws which benefit people who just turn up and get put on, irrespective of whether or not their local party or their supporters want them to get the nomination. They get on the ticket because that's the law. If we want to actually address the issue about getting more women involved in politics, we have to get back from a simple analysis which says there's discrimination which stops women. Women aren't taken seriously. People don't want women. People are sexist. And that's why there are no women in politics. There may be a whole series of other reasons involved which speak to issues of interest and temperament. And if we are serious, then we have to address how we go about finessing those issues.
Do you remember when Leo said that Ireland was in no ways a equal country for men and women?
Yeah.
And then the reasons he gave were basically that there aren't equal amounts of women in various positions. The Journal wrote that up. They mentioned it in another article. And the way they wrote it up was, "Of course, even the Taoiseach of Ireland has admitted that the country is not equal." There is a weirdness. They assume that two people who have different temperaments and have equal opportunities in life will end up in the same place.
Yeah.
Whereas you can easily say someone who is a doctor and someone who is a carpenter, both of those people could be in exactly the position they want to be in.
Yes.
And is that not the nature of an equal society? And if we simply say, "Well, no, you have to become a carpenter because we need the proper ratio here and we're not getting it," that would in fact be a deeply unequal society.
Yeah. Like, one of the points that Jordan Peterson makes about is if you look at societies that have flattened through practice and custom and legislation, the social aspects as much as they can so far, about access to different kinds of education, different kinds of professions, that you find that they continue to express high degrees of gender difference. Now, I think that the numbers he quotes are actually wrong. I don't think that in some places the numbers are quite what he suggests they are. But I remember rooting around and looking, and I found, for example, to my memory, if you look at Scandinavia, if you look at, say, nursing, like Norway, it's 9-1. Denmark, it's 20 women for every one man. The one that sticks in my mind, I think, is Iceland. I think Iceland, it's 100-1. But if you go to countries, say, like Israel, I think it's more like 4-1. That's a different, you have a different economic thing there. Initially, I think it's 4-1, but again, nursing is a different kind of thing. And we know that, say, if we look at engineering, you get higher levels of engineers amongst women in less economically developed countries, with also countries which traditionally would score lower on gender equality. And by the way, simply on, if we're on the most commonly used table for gender equality, we come in 7th in the world. So it's not too bad. I mean, it's not exactly awful, is it?
The idea that we're not an equal country, based purely on the fact that we don't have equal levels of men and women in different things, isn't even a good argument.
No.
I mean, as these things go.
Also, a lot of it, do you not think a lot of it is a kind of it's a kind of a moral attempt to rectify history. Because historically bad things were done to certain groups of people, now we want to introduce these moral gestures, in a sense, to absolve ourselves from historical guilt, even though it may be the case that we have actually rectified through practice the problems that previously existed, and now we're in the process of answering a problem which no longer really exists. But this, I think that's the United States, say, on the race issue. I think there's an element of trying to fix history, which is a really waste of time.
I think it's also a deep element of people absolutely believing something and then fitting evidence to it.
Sure. There's an article in the Indo, I don't know if the listener may have come across, by Lorraine Courtney, who is not a bad journalist in many ways.
With Lorraine, it depends what she's writing about. Some mm-hmm. subjects she's actually very solid on, and some she just kind of lets loose. But I'm assuming this is the give your vote to a woman, it's the only way to break the tyranny of mediocre men article. Because, Michael, we don't have enough mediocre women.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's the thing. Like, there are a couple of statements, and I understand that the piece is probably written in a kind of rhetorical voice. It's, you know, let's G up the votes. But the first line is, if a man has a suit and can put a poster on a poll, people automatically assume he's TD material and vote for him. Well, I can tell you, Pat, I've been involved with trying to get people elected, and that ain't true. You can buy them really good suits and put up really nice posters, and they still won't vote for him. And they certainly will not assume that he's TD material. That's just simply not the case.
No, I mean, you can put a suit on someone, but people are still very, very quick to tell you that the horse don't run.
We can't keep pretending to live in a real democracy when more than half of us aren't represented.
That's actually, that line.
Yeah, that to me, that's the heart of the problem.
If that's true, democracy is pointless.
Yeah.
Which is an argument I don't think she realises she's making. Because if the fact that there are more men than women in the Dáil and in cabinet means that women aren't represented, then you can only be represented by people who are exactly the same as you. At which point, democracy as any sort of useful function just ceases to matter. And you would effectively just have a pure game of power.
Well, I suppose the contemporary critiques of the postmodern, what people keep like calling postmodernism, say that's the problem, that the analysis is simply one of power. It's all about power. It's also the assumption that by a distance, the dominating factor in every woman's choices, the fact that she is a woman, that is the overarching thing that informs the way she makes choices about the world and about the problems and the solutions that the country faces.
I did also like the next line. You know, we don't actually know what the country would be like if it was run by women. But if we had equal number of women and men in public office, maybe childcare would be affordable instead of costing €1,000 a month, and women's shelters would have adequate funding. We've had a great deal of female ministers in those areas. They haven't traditionally been great.
Well, she might argue that if we had more women, that they she could. If we had, we've never had a woman minister for finance, and ultimately have to go to the minister for finance to get the dosh. However, just on that, childcare. In that, if you unpack it, it seems to me the assumption is that women who have made the correct choice are going to be women who require childcare outside the home. What about the very large? We know from surveys that have been done, that haven't been liked, but have been done in pretty decent surveys too, that most women would prefer to take care of their children in their homes. And yet, the unrelenting position of Irish politicians, men and women, certainly women politicians, is to talk about the provision of childcare and state-funded childcare, mass childcare.
But professional childcare, when we say state-funded childcare, because there are, and this actually came up during the Fianna Fáil manifesto launch.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was. I think it was one of the male journalists, if that's of any importance here, asked, they're talking about childcare credits, or I'm not sure if it was a tax allowance or if it was money directly given to them. And they asked, would that only go to registered childcarers? Because there are other countries in Europe in which you can leave your children with your grandparents.
Yes.
And they can claim the credit.
Yes.
Which works quite well, as you would imagine, for keeping costs down. And Michal said, no, it's only registered childcarers, creches, that kind of thing. So we do have a weird childcare system in many ways. It's very restrictive in that you effectively, if you want any state support at all, you have to go work and then you have to put your children into a formal certified, state certified, a childcare facility. You can't use family, you can't use friends, you can't use anything like that, and you definitely can't stay there yourself.
But the assumption underlying a lot of this is that the only valuable actualized, self-actualized woman is the woman who is working outside the home.
Well, I mean, Michael, really, you know, it was only when we realized that the only value of women was in their ability to produce economic worth that women really became free.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
I found myself in a weird situation the last couple of years as being someone very much on the right and very pro-capitalism, of being the person going, perhaps there is more to the human person than purely the amount of money they can make the economy.
It's not a comfortable thing when it happens to you, is it?
No, because you just hear the, what's the old song? Now they're calling you a radical, a socialist.
Yeah.
There is that sort of, now lads, have we thought that the free trade thing, that was great. We all got TVs for a third of what we paid. But the total hollowing out of, you know, the industrial base and the misery and the fact we seem to have destroyed entire sectors of society, can we maybe say that wasn't a great thing?
If you start to wonder to yourself, is there maybe possibly some kind of a case which says just because this will produce 8% growth of GDP, while this will only produce 4% growth of GDP, that there are aspects of the 4% growth GDP which are preferable?
Maybe, in fact, the 8% option is immoral.
It may be. And it also may be, to use a horrible word, and this is why one feels so uncomfortable having these conversations, there may be a sense that at a level of a human culture, elements of it which are unsustainable.
I really miss the old days where I could simply be like, no, just more raw, just raw capitalism. Mm. And other people could be the people to go, yes, we stand up for the working class. Whereas now those people hate the working class.
Yes.
And in order to maintain some semblance of balance, you have to sort of go, lads, this is kind of going a bit mad though, isn't it?
I'll ask you a question before we finish. The last sentence of this is, Female candidates, last paragraph, female candidates have to work twice as hard to convince the electorate, which is half women, by the way, that they are really as worthy as that man who has coasted along his male privilege the whole of his life.
That's not the end of it, Michael. That article continues under the poll. It's twice as long
Sorry, you're right. I'm looking under the poll. But I'm just saying, I'm sure, I don't doubt there was large chunks of the time when lots of people would have looked at a woman and said, but, you know, are they really up for it? And can they handle it? And with their little brains and all that kind of thing. But today, how many do you, I'm willing to be told that there's 20% of the population and it's still a big problem or more, I don't know. Like, if I go to the doctors and I get a woman doctor, there is no part of me thinking, oh, I wish I'd got a man. Or if I go to an architect's office and I get a woman architect, or if I get a, you know, I get a woman engineer, there's no part of me which is, oh, I wonder, oh God, I wish I got the bloke. In fact, I think a lot of people, I mean, talk about medicine, a lot of people I know tendentially would say, oh no, they kind of prefer the woman doctor, or she's rather good. But I don't know. But are there, in this day and age, in Ireland, in 2020, how many people really look at a woman candidate and that she has to be twice as good? You know, this goes back, there's an old joke, I think it's from the 70s. It was the mayor of Montreal. It was a woman mayor of Montreal, I think it originated. It said, to be successful in politics, a woman has to be twice as good as a man. Luckily, this is not difficult. Which is a good line.
Although I always preferred Margaret Thatcher when she was asked if she was given any extra allowances on how she did by her ministers, and she, because she was a woman. I think she gets asked the question, she's like, why? Like, you know, as a woman, she goes, her response was, well, I mean, I don't make any extra allowances for them as men.
And she didn't.
No, she did not.
But of course, Thatcher isn't a woman, and we know that. She has been excluded from so many lists and accolades. No, she's not really a woman.
They have a real problem with women and homosexuals who don't agree with them, in a sort of very personal sort of sense.
I mean, you look at it,
almost as if they think those groups owe them something.
Yeah. At this stage, if you look at, say, when Theresa May went in and they said, okay, like, it's Tories 2, Labour 0. So at this stage in Britain, if you look at the Tory party, they have had two women, two Jewish leaders, if you count Disraeli as Jewish. They've had a circus entertainer from a family, comprehensive boy, John Major. The Labour Party is yet to elect a woman leader, yet to elect a Jewish leader. And certainly at the moment, that doesn't look likely. It is odd that somehow you lose your privilege points from your ethnicity or your race or your gender. If you're a conservative, you don't get them. Ted Cruz is not a Latino.
No. I'm very curious if Lorraine has any involvement in politics, or has had any involvement in politics. One, I, to be quite honest, I don't think it's possible to work twice as hard as most of the candidates who actually get elected. Most of them do work.
Now, the thing is, of course, the kind of work they do, they may not be doing the kind of work that our journalists think they should be doing.
Perhaps work that is not valued.
They are not being legislators. They're doing the parish pump politics.
I mean, my girlfriend works a 9-to-5 engineer, just 9-to-5, very occasionally overtime kind of thing. And I remember it took her years to get used to the fact that if I would go on a trip to America or somewhere in Europe, or I would go out drinking with someone, that was not what I wanted to do. That was not a social occasion.
Yeah.
That was I need to do this to work.
Yes.
Because we need to get work from these people. And if that involves, you know, you go out for a dinner and you're talking about potential work and it goes well and they're asking, do you want to go for drinks? And you end up till 3 a.m, yeah, you'll try to enjoy it. But the actual reason you're there is because you want work from these people.
Yeah.
I went to, the first time I went to New York for something, I was at a conference. I didn't see outside of my hotel. I was in New York for 4 days.
Yeah.
Didn't see anything outside. Didn't, I think we went to a bar one night. But it took her years to understand that that is work.
Like you might, an example recently where somebody asked me, would I like to go to Washington for 6 days next year? And my response was, please don't make me. Can't we get someone else? And hopefully we will. No, you don't do these things because you want to. You do these things because you have to.
I mean, you try. Like, if you're going out drinking with someone, it's easier if you like them. And it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
But if you thought they were a prick, you'd still go out with them.
How many deathly lunches have you been at where you're there and you can feel that, well, you're at that smiley. I'm a bit more smiley when I'm trying to be pleasant with people. And I can feel this tension under my jaw and I think, oh, God. Listen, on the other hand, we're not, it's better than digging ditches. Which I would simply lie down in the ditch and die long before the ditch was finished. But the kind of work you do, if you are a small-scale TD working around in Ireland, a man or a woman, you are working bloody hard. And if you're not, there's a very, very good chance that they'll sack you.
It is. And it is quite amusing sometimes when people who are like, these TDs are useless. I'm going to run against them.
Yeah.
And then the tire hits the road.
Oh,
and there's that sudden realization of what the bloody hell is this? What do you mean I need to do this? And they usually, I think that's why they usually fail to unseat those TDs. Because they get to a point where, okay, now you need to be organized. And now you need work. And now you need to do things. And by the way, if you win here, this is your next 4 years. Enjoy this. I mean, the stories of Bertie Ahern winning an election and then going out canvassing the next day.
Absolutely true. Friend of mine told me she was making the Sunday dinner. She was living down Condra. 12 o'clock, ding dong. It was the Sunday after. The election had been on the Thursday. There's Bertie by himself with some leaflets and stuff. And how are you? I'm Bertie Ahern. I'm your local TD. This is the number of my local office. If you need anything, give me a call. She rang me up in the office. You will not believe who's just been at my door. But that was the way Bertie ended up getting 18,000 or whatever it was for his preferences.
I mean, that's how he ended up being able to elect a second runner who got 900 votes.
Which was...
because he was good. And he was dedicated. And now, that was all his life.
That's not to say that if you went around the constituencies in Ireland that you wouldn't be able to find some individuals that you would look at and say, how in the name of God do they keep electing this person?
There are a few of them, yeah.
But
more councillors than I think TDs.
Yeah, more these days. But there are, I have a couple in my head. Obviously, I won't name names because one is
please,
a coward.
We've got a year without being sued, please.
Yeah, we'll try. But I suppose after that, then I say, well, I'm not from there. I don't actually know what the local dynamic is. I don't know what they do on the ground. I know nothing, really. So maybe I'm missing something.
No, I mean, I've talked to people about ministers and TDs who I thought were absolutely useless and ones who are from their constituency. And you will hear, no, they're amazing on the ground. And that's what they do. And then you say, well, maybe we shouldn't have made that person a minister, but good on them for doing the work.
Anyway.
But I really do support far more women becoming TDs. Because there are too many happy women in this country, Michael. And not enough female alcoholics.
Not enough female alcoholics. Well, the Dáil Bar, maybe. Of course, there aren't
that many seats in the Irish Parliament. But I think anything we can do to bring those numbers down is service for the greater good. Also, however much you think you want to help people. Like, 5 minutes with Leo walking around the place and people walking up to him when he's on camera,
yeah,
giving him the spiel and then walking off before he can respond. or just shouting at him, or just abusing him.
But also knowing that he can't respond.
Like, he can't stand there and just go, come here, listen here, you little prick.
You know nothing. You've
no fucking idea what I've done. You're some little jumped-up gobshite who isn't even going to fucking vote.
There was a wonderful case many moons ago where it was an election in England. I don't know if it was caught on camera, but I was told by a person who saw it. Cameras were there, but I don't know if it's still there. By a man who was actually present, he said, and something like this, it was a Tory going around somewhere in the home counties. And some young guy came up and gave him the spiel. And the guy turned and said, basically, what you're saying, you know nothing, and I know a lot. So, you go away, find out something about the world, then come back to me, and the next time, be a little bit more polite, and there's a chance you might get an answer. But that kind of thing, my favourite, I think a lot of people's favourite moment of this kind of, well, slightly different. Do you remember the famous incidents where John Prescott was campaigning for Tony Blair and he got an egg thrown at him?
That's where I was going as well. That was, and he just levels the guy.
Turns out, he boxed as when he was a sailor. And because you could see the way the shape of his body was not the way I would have thrown a box. It was a proper boxer's shape.
The great thing is, I don't know if you've seen the photo recently, Michael, but there's a photo of as Prescott's fist hits the guy in the teeth, the guy is still smirking at Prescott. Oh, yeah.
That's the thing that made it all. Other circumstances, but that was what saved Prescott. Your man looked so delighted with himself.
Yeah, he's just like, I fucked an egg at you and you can't touch me.
Yeah.
As he's being punched in the face.
But the brilliant thing about that also was the response of Tony Blair.
Lots
of other politicians would have missed it and got it wrong and apologised and Prescott was in trouble. Blair's response, he laughed and said, well, that's John for you.
It was a beautiful punch as well.
Just that. And it was beautiful. It was fantastic. But the fact is, it's not that I'm a fan of Leo's, God knows, but that's just wrong. It's utterly unfair. You come up, if you really want to engage him, stand there, ask him a question, let him answer it, and have a debate. If you're confident. But he didn't. He just spieled it, and he was gone.
Prescott actually, after he punched the guy, gets clean taken to the ground. Like, he gets mobbed by people. And there's security guards pulling him off, and they're, it's fantastic.
Yeah, the proper melee.
It is, like, it's great. There's like 6 or 7 people around him.
I don't know. It's like, what did you think? This is not much about feminism, but do you remember was the same day, Leo was meeting somebody involved in working with the homeless in Cork, and there's a photograph of Leo with his hand extended, and your man won't shake hands with him.
Oh, I've seen it. Yeah, he's standing in the doorway.
You know, I understand people have strong views. They can feel passionate. You're working in that area. You see lots of bad stuff. But I don't know. I just think it's a prickish thing to do. I remember many moons ago being in a place having my dinner, and Mary Robinson walked in, and she wasn't no longer president. Maybe she was president at the time. And I just instinctively stood up because the president had come into the room. And I was slightly shocked that nobody else did. Because it wasn't that Mary Robinson, who I hadn't voted for and wouldn't vote for, had come into the room. But the president had come into the room. And in the same way, Leo Varadkar, yes, politician, was handy. But he was also, he isn't really, I know, technically. But he is kind of still, he was Taoiseach of the country. And I think, you know, a little bit, a respect, if not for the person, at least some for the office. And
I mean, look,
maintain the basic civilities of life.
There are things it's very easy to do to a politician because, you know, they can't respond.
Yeah.
I don't tend to have a lot of respect for them. Whereas if you do something in a way a politician can respond to you, even if it's negative, I think that's perfectly fine.
Sure.
It's this position of, I can fuck with you because I am irrelevant here. But if you do anything to me, it'll be a problem for you. And so I'm just going to poke at you. Did you ever hear Alistair Campbell talking about the phone call he got from John Prescott after that?
No.
It's he said got a call from Prescott, and Prescott went, "Hi, I've just thumped a bloke." And I said, "What sort of bloke?" And he went, "Just a bloke." He goes, "Well, why did you hit him?" And Prescott went, "Well, he was a prat." And Alistair Campbell said, "Well, John, if we punched everyone we thought was a prat." And he said, Prescott went, I know. Anyway, I just called to say I'm not resigning.
Oh, two jags. Mm. That's what they used to call him. He had two jags. He liked it. Now, there is a man, that's, for example, whether you like him or lump him, a man who could not exist in the modern Labour Party. And the modern Labour Party desperately needs him. Somebody capable of being authentic and connecting with their traditional working class base. Where is the John Prescott for the Labour Party today? I think they're in need of one.
I don't know. I mean, say what you will. Prescott was also helped by the fact that I believe the people he punched were anti or pro-hunting protesters.
Possibly, I don't know.
People historically don't like a lot of the time. Particularly in Labour. But I know he's Prescott was a good sort. He's a surprisingly erudite man as well.
Although he did have some most wonderful battles with the English language.
Yes, he did.
He was more than Mrs. Malapurum. Anyway, I suppose we should draw a veil over it at that stage.
He was actually voted, I think, at one stage, the most gaffe-prone politician in Britain, in the United Kingdom.
Oh, well, he was at the dispatch box, some of the stuff that he... I mean, I think, if anybody's interested, there are clip compilations of John Prescott on YouTube that are good, solid entertainment. If you want to have a look at that there, just Google John Prescott and gaffes.
His green belt comment, I think, was my favourite.
I don't remember that.
The green belt is a Labour achievement. And I tell you now, we mean to build on it.
That's wonderful.
Anyway. Anyway, we will see you again Wednesday, I believe.
Wednesday? We may have... God knows, there may even be another poll out by Wednesday. It'll be terribly exciting, I don't know.
That will save you from the indignity of two men talking about feminism for an hour again.
Yes, I'm sure the feminists out there really enjoyed that. Anyway, have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Not because we're men, but because they don't enjoy anything.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All the best.